from Boca Raton, Florida, this is Behind the Bima. On this episode, the rabbis, with a special guest host, are joined by celebrity chef Naomi Nachman. Naomi talks about how her media career got started, explains her rules for social media, and shares tips on preparing for Pesach, also recapping an emotional week in the community and Israel. And where is Rabbi Brody this week? All this and more Behind the Bima.
Good evening. It's Wednesday night, 9 p.m. I am your host, Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg, joined live by my dear friend, who knows which hotel room he's in where now, Rabbi Josh Brody.
Rabbi coming Brody. To you live.
Coming to us live. Rabbi Brody, it's Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Where are you this week?
I just drove from New Jersey. I'm up in Connecticut right now.
Connecticut. And have you been in Florida for an entire week and how many months?
No, it's been a long time, but getting to see all these amazing Jewish communities all over America, and we are bringing Achdut, unity.
What airline? You must have crazy airline status at this point because I think you're flying weekly these days.
Yeah. But you know what the problem is? It's JetBlue. So you just, you know, you get your free drink and it's nice.
That's it. You get your beer no matter what time of day.
You get your, exactly.
Let's begin with our attitude of gratitude. Let us thank our generous sponsor of this evening's episode, our good friend Shimon Kamenetsky. Shimon, who is with Booker Promotions, just like oneself, your business needs to be the best version of itself. Exceptional creativity, customer service based by exceeding expectations through promotional products. Shimon Kamenetsky, for example.
Shimon Kamenetsky.
Caffeinate with Kavana is our beautiful
who
cup.
Knew?
Shimon Kamenetsky. You can email him at shimon@bookerpromo.com. shimon@bookerpromo.com. Now, Shimon has also sponsored tonight's episode in honor of a very special birthday. Our good friend, his brother, Noam Kamenetsky, is celebrating the big 5-0. And I have to say this, Noam does not look a day older than 49 and a half. So it's hard to believe. It is actually hard to believe that he is 50. But our friend Noam, where does the time go? Noam Kamenetsky, the big 5-0.
Maybe brother could make some big Noam 50 t-shirts and we could all wear them.
That would be great. I know that I would. And we're excited. Noam is great. Noam is the heart of BRS, heart of the shul. Welcomes everyone with a big smile.
Everyone loves Noam. Got
a heart of gold. So a big happy birthday to Noam. And we'll say this, particularly this year and particularly for Noam. Tough year, lost a dear friend, a friend of ours, and really another brother to Noam. So, you know, people joke about their birthday. They don't want to celebrate it. They don't want to know about it. When you're young, you can't wait. Like my kids, they count down. They stay up till midnight. They're friends in school. They come over at midnight. They do all kinds of shtick. Birthday is like the biggest thing. Then you hit some age where you pretend it's not your birthday. You don't want anyone to know it's your birthday. You don't talk about being your birthday. But I tell you, after we've lost a few very young friends, I don't care what number birthday it is, lean in, embrace it, celebrate it. Because if you've lived another year, if you can cross off another birthday, you're a very fortunate person. You're a very blessed person. So Noam, happy 50th to you, my friend. Many more in good health and happiness keeping you. Brody, you're moving in on 50. You're closing in.
Yeah, I am. First of all, I was just gonna say back in the good old days of Behind the Bima, we probably would have made a l'chaim to Noam, but I got Snapple. That's all. You know, but, you know, I was actually thinking about this because I'm 47. Someone else I know might be 47 also, going on 48 this year. And, you know, my father passed away. He was 57. Mm. So then, you know, and you know me, I love birthdays. I know some people don't like to celebrate them. Some people, other hosts of Behind the Bima. And I love it. For me, it's like the birthday month. It's the birthday week. I get all excited. And then it's like, you know what? At the same time, get a little bit nervous because you don't know how much time is left. You know, all the men in my father's side never they didn't make it too long, you know, and
right.
So it's you know, a little sobering, but
yeah,
you gotta put it all in, you gotta make it happen.
You gotta live to its fullest. Lubavitcher Rebbe Zatzal was a very big proponent of celebrating birthdays. You know, it was very consistent. There's a book called Positivity Bias about how the Rebbe was so focused on being positive, not negative, right? So he talked about, he wouldn't use the term deadline. He talked about a due date.
Right.
He didn't talk about a Beit Cholim, talked about a Beit Refuah. So he also said, don't focus on a Yahrzeit, focus on a birthday. That's why Lubavitchers are always giving you brachas on their Hebrew birthday, because he was very big and very into celebrating birthdays. So a lot of people try to ignore them, but we love Noam. So I wish him a big happy birthday and many, many more.
But you also brought up again this week we did lose. It was a big loss to our community. Corey Reichenberg. I mean, you spoke, and his family members spoke, and it was definitely one of the. If it goes down in our community, is one of the biggest losses. It was so emotional.
Yeah. Just turned 24, young man, had Duchenne's muscular dystrophy diagnosed at 3 years old. And we all watched. We actually had kids. I had a kid in the same grade, the same class as him. And you watched him from a three-year-old who got diagnosed to 12-year-old who had to go into a wheelchair. And that's what muscular dystrophy does and the decline. And incredible parent, incredible family. Reichenberg was just extraordinary. He was a very special person. He had tremendous tenacity, bravery. Faith, positivity, it's funny, spunky,
right? Snarky. Great friends. You said something which was so powerful. The fact that his friends from a very young age were doing things that adults sometimes don't even have the self-awareness to be part of and be involved in. And
yeah,
it was very powerful.
There was a fateful day, and he was 12 years old, a couple months before his bar mitzvah, and he said, "I just can't do this anymore," and he had to go into a wheelchair. And right away, 12-year-olds, a group of 12-year-olds, they knew exactly how to take turns with the wheelchair, helping him navigate, including him in everything, making sure their backyards and houses would work to hang out with the wheelchair, class trips. And it was amazing. I spoke to the then head of school. We'll give him a little shout out, Rabbi Adam Englander. I think we're starting to get over it now. Are we forgiving him yet for leaving Boca? Maybe not. But then head of school, I spoke to him, and he said that he barely had to speak to the kids. There wasn't like a big meeting. You didn't call a big, conversation with the kids. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to do it. They knew how to do it. And what I said, which is true, is that these kids, they knew how to straddle that fine line between, on the one hand, helping Corey navigate what became a complicated world for him in a wheelchair, but on the other hand, making everything as normal as possible.
Right.
They knew that at 12 years old, they knew that.
Yeah, I'm thinking back, like 12 years old, when we had friends that had whatever challenges they had. I'm pretty sure that we made fun of them. Like, I just don't remember being like that nice. Or
I think we've come a long way in that way. But you're making a good point, which is that we tend to knock the next generation. Oh, these kids and millennials and Generation X, Y, all the ones after them, self-centered, egotistical, all about them, pleasure seekers on demand. And there's some truth to a lot of that. But there's also, we should have faith in them, should restore our faith in them and humanity. They're great kids. They did a great job. And you saw them come together. That was the powerful image. Looking out at that funeral, was many of his classmates flew in, and these are graduates of the community, right? They're 23, 24 years old, and this was not the reason they wanted to have a reunion.
Right.
Some of these classmates hadn't seen each other in a long time, and this was not the reason they wanted to be together and rally around. So, definitely was tough.
There was also that one moment where his father got up and spoke. And there was a constant theme. I mean, you spoke about it. His sister spoke about how he didn't want the attention, and how at his graduation, there was talk about maybe everyone standing, welcoming as he would wheel down the aisle, and everyone agreed not to do it. And his father said, "You know what? He's not here to argue with us right now."
Right.
Could everyone stand? Standing ovation. And it was just so powerful.
It was actual hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. And a standing O. It was powerful. And it was a real rabbinic day. I'm probably writing about it this week, but it was a real, not because I want to write or draw attention to me, but I think it's a fascinating thing for people to know or think about. And it wasn't only a rabbinic day in the sense that I went through it. There was a group of people that went from the funeral, drove literally from the cemetery to a wedding. And there were two young people from the shul who got married, Tani Shaka and Emma Frieden, beautiful wedding, beautiful souls. Beautiful people. In fact, Tani Zofrof was on Shabbos, and there was huge, tremendous energy in the air. His friends, he's learning in Toras Chaim, TC in Israel, and they have a lot of energy, those TC boys, and they made a beautiful Ofrof, and they were hopping and bopping and jumping and dancing and singing. And right after davening, somebody close with the Reichenberg said to me, he said, "Rabbi, tomorrow, two kids in the community are going to get married, and one kid's going to get buried."
Right.
And that contrast and that day, I also had an upsharing on Sunday and taught a couple of classes. So, it was teaching, life cycle, upsharing, funeral, than wedding. And it's that notion of changing gears. We've talked about it before on Behind the Bima as rabbis, but it's not only as rabbis, as people.
Right.
You go from one meeting into the next meeting. Doctors go from one patient's good news to the next patient's bad news. I mean,
And just to put that in perspective, that's after a full Shabbos.
Yeah.
And then you begin Monday, which is the beginning of the week.
So yeah. Yeah. It's not, again, not showing any of this for sympathy, but the human capacity to change gears and compartmentalize doesn't mean you're insensitive or you don't care. Right. It just means that there's a time and a place, which actually brings us to the next topic. We're going to bring on our guest soon, the great Naomi Nachman, author and a podcast host and writer in Mishpacha Magazine. She does it all. But there was a video that made the rounds. Even Yeshiva World News picked it up, of Mori Varabi of Rav Schechter. Did you see the video?
I'm sure I did.
Rabbi Brody mentioned a few weeks ago that he's making Aliyah. I think he's got a foot and a half already there and out of here. Doesn't really check WhatsApp much anymore. So anyway,
I had to give a Dvar Torah for Federation this week, and I was, let's just say, it wasn't clear where I was. So the rumor was that I was actually in Poland or Ukraine. It just seemed from the imagery around me.
Right. I hear you. I understand.
I'm in America.
By the way, you're in America. That's good. Apropos, our fact checker just reminded me that Dr. Mendy Gantrow, Olav Shalom, who was a past president of the OU and a very big communal activist, Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz shared that Mendy Gantrow's father and grandfather both passed away at 57. So when he turned 57, he decided he was done working and he went to go do Jewish communal work. He was the president of the OU. He wrote, helped collect some writings for Svarim. And that's an amazing story, that basically he decided that if he would be gifted more years than his father and grandfather, they both died at 57, that he was going to dedicate them to Klal Yisrael. So at 57, he retired.
I got 10 more years. Breaking news.
Yeah.
No, but actually, I am doing Klal Yisrael already. What else can I do?
You're doing it. Yeah, that's true. Maybe at 57, you'll stop Klal Yisrael and see your family a little bit. Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh, Rav Schechter, do you see this video? So
what was the video?
Rav Schechter gives a weekly shiur on Zoom, I think in Brooklyn, and he's giving the shiur. It's an incredible video. He's giving the shiur, speaking about the Shulchan Aruch, and you hear the Rebbetzin yell, Mazel Tov. And she comes in and she says, I think Shira had a baby girl. So he goes, okay, Mazel Tov. She says, that's it? He says, yeah, the shiur. And he goes right back into Shulchan Aruch and he gives a whole long shiur. And then the video cuts right to the end of the shiur and it shows that it ends. And he says, okay, we'll see you next week. And everyone says, well, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. So he says, he goes to Vali, he goes, did anyone hear if it's a boy or a girl? I didn't hear. I was focused on the Shulchan Aruch. And they say, yeah, it was a girl. It was a girl. So he says, oh, this was my ninth child. Their sixth child. Like, he knows exactly how many children, grandchildren. Right. Again, we know Rav Schechter, and he loves his family. He knows everything about it. This is not, you know, someone's a gadol and he doesn't even know his own grandchildren's names. It's just that somebody is so connected to Torah and engrossed and focused and concentrating on Torah that there was nothing else in that moment. Even some personal joy, he knew that, okay, he'll hear it and celebrate it and be excited about it as soon as he's done with the shiur. But right then he's giving a shiur and communicating and teaching Torah. So there were some people.
Next time you have a grandchild, I'll yell it out. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, there were some people who were critical, that reaction, he should stop and celebrate. I think, though, there's some godless in that focus and that ability to concentrate on Torah. And, you know, it's not only Torah. I mean, we'll leave it at that. But so there are people who have that gift and who have that ability. And I think it's very, very special and very, very beautiful. Yeah. Obviously, we pause to think about the 11 victims in Israel over the last week. This is the biggest, I think, the most victims of terror in Israel since 2006 in 1 week. 11 people in 1 week. And we get lulled into this false sense of security. We get lulled into a sleep. Lulled into that, you know, the terrorists are busy fighting Corona or distracted with Ukraine, but they're hard at work. I wrote a post, and I really do believe this. This week was not an aberration, meaning it's not that our enemies took a break, they retired, they were in sabbatical, and now they decided to work again and they murdered 11 people. If you look at the data and the statistic, Israel releases it once a year. They thwart terror attacks every day, every week. So it's not that this week was the exception. What was an exception is that they got through. But every week, terrorists are trying to do this. So on a week where there are not 11 murder victims, we should think of Hashem, thank Hashem, and thank the IDF, thank Israel's defense and security forces who do what they do, because these enemies are hard at work and they're trying to do it each and every week. And we should be incredibly grateful to,
I was just going to say, I mean, in the same way I didn't see that Rosh Hashanah video. And again, I know it's been a busy week. Every night I do check the news. I'm watching Fox and CNN and just watching what's going on in Ukraine. You do see whatever Google, but I haven't been on social media in a very, very long time. It's been months. And I got to be honest, I didn't even know about this. Like, you didn't see it anywhere. It wasn't on the mainstream media at all. I only saw it because someone posted in a group the article, and I just read something.
Right. Well, you've got to check. I'll tell you. I'm going to give you a little mussar now, Rabbi Brody. Yeah. And I said it to somebody else recently I'm very close with. It's not hard. Download the Times of Israel app on your phone and just make the conscious decision a couple times a day to open it up. I'm not giving you mussar. I'm just telling you I do that because I feel libi b'mizrach. We can be connected to Israel even when you're 6,000 miles away, where you're constantly checking. And it's like a 3-second check. And it's not like opening social media where you'll look at it.
You read very quickly.
No. But I'm saying the danger of social media is that you open it and then you see one video, you see one post, you see a thing. There's like a black hole that now you're lost in.
Right.
You look at a couple headlines and you move on. But
right.
I really believe the Eima Banam Smecha.
No, but believe me, I'm not off social media for any, it's just, I don't know how to get back in. I'm trying to figure out the reentry. And when I come back, it's going to be bigger than ever. But you're off it, you just don't see it. And then you realize the bubble that we live in, that the world is not focused on anything that we are interested in.
Yeah, you think it'd make headlines. What other country in the world would be 3 terror attacks that murder 11 people in cold blood and it doesn't make a headline anywhere?
Nothing.
Because in Israel, it's a given. Could you imagine across America or in New York or Florida, there were 3 terror attacks in a span of 1 week and 11 victims?
Right. In one state, let's say.
The response would be enormous, right?
Right.
And so it is disturbing. And I think it's important. I started to say Rav Techtal, the author of the Eima Banam Smecha, who was a very anti-Zionist, he wasn't Hungarian, I think Romanian Rav before the war, and during the Holocaust realized that, in fact, his anti-Zionism was wrong. And he went against everyone in his life and everyone who came before him. And he wrote by memory without the luxury of a library, which makes it astounding, the sources that he quotes. But he wrote a work, it's been translated into English, I think by Rabbi Moshe Lichtman, but it's called Eima Banam Smecha, Rabbi Techtal. And in there he writes that even before there could be a physical ingathering of the exiles, there's a spiritual ingathering that when Jews spread out across the globe, turn their attention and concern to Israel, then we're gathered. And I always kind of feel that way, that when Times of Israel or Jerusalem Post or whatever your news source is, when they check the IP addresses of who's reading and they see there's a Jew in Boca in Australia and South Africa, and there are Jews who are in Greenland and Iceland and France and Germany and England, and when there are Jews all over the world checking based on those IP addresses, that's also a kibbutz galios. So it's worth checking. But there is a phenomenon that's happened, which is, I don't think, a great one. And then we really want to bring our guest on. Because there's security footage everywhere these days, within a short time of an attack, the video of the attack ends up making the rounds.
Right.
And Hillefold posted very strongly because he learned about the murder of his brother Arifold, Shem Yukom Damo, because he heard about a terror attack and the video went out. And when he pressed the video, that's when he learned it was his brother who was the victim. And he basically put a very strongly worded, and I think he's 100% right, it's insensitive to the family of the victims. It's insensitive, I think, to the victims. And it desensitizes ourselves. Because now it's like a movie, it's like a TV show, it's like a person's eating or drinking or having lunch when they click on their WhatsApp video that you got on your alert in your WhatsApp group of, oh, here's the actual incident. And you're watching somebody murder Jews. You're watching them. That's not something you should see casually. It's not something that you should see. It's not respectful to the memory, to the family, and it desensitizes ourselves. And I don't think anyone's bad. I don't think anyone is malicious who's doing that. I just don't know that we're being mindful.
Right.
I don't think it's a mindful decision. I don't think anyone sat down and said, hey, is it a good idea for us to spread the videos of these terror attacks and for people to directly see exactly what happened? Because I think if we thought about it in that way, I think we probably wouldn't do it. And we're not thinking about it. So it's just happening. And that's not, That's not a good thing. So I actually, when I saw HilloFold's post about his brother, and then I got one of these alerts with, here was the video of the terror attack with this gunman. Yeah, I didn't watch it.
You didn't watch it.
Because the only reason to watch it is this voyeuristic drive, right? That, like, I'm so curious, what does that look like, a terror attack?
Right.
How did the people, what was the look on their face, or how did they react?
You and I are not watching it to try to figure out, if it happened in our community, what would we do to avert it? Or you know, we're not doing it to learn something from it.
Right. We're not the shin bet. We're not looking at how Trace was anyone else involved. So to just watch it voyeuristically, you know, it's a disservice to the victim, to their family, and like I said, to ourselves. So we have the privilege this evening of welcoming on Naomi Nachman, who is a good friend of our community, happens to be a good friend of my wife. We actually have a guest co-host for the interview with Naomi Nachman, which was very exciting. Naomi Nachman has written a couple of cookbooks, kosher cookbooks. She has her own cooking demos and shows at kosher.com. She has her own podcast on the Nachum Segal Network. And we definitely are giving a shout out. You probably don't know this either, since you have chosen to live under a rock of late, Rabbi Brody. But do you know that Nachum Segal's JM and the AM studio burned down? There was a fire, burned to the ground. All of his memorabilia, all of his awards, all of his swag, everything from his whole, all of his legacy. Thank God he's okay. But we love Nachum. He's a previous guest on Behind the Bima and a mentor to us in this industry.
Yeah.
And so big shout out to Nachum Segal.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah, thinking about him and wishing him well and hoping for his best. But we are excited to be able to welcome on, without any further ado, Naomi Nachman. I'm super excited not only to have Naomi Nachman, the great author and chef and host, on our program, but I'm really excited by our special guest host today, Rebbetzin Yocheved Goldberg. Yocheved, thank you for doing this with me. And I'm excited. First of all, we're rotating and we're bringing in people, and I'm knowing I want to do this more with it than you, but also your longstanding friendship with Naomi makes you the perfect guest host for today. So Naomi, thank you for joining us. Thank you for letting us go behind the bima with you in the countdown to Pesach. You know, you're incredibly busy. We're all busy, but it's great to spend some time together.
I'm thrilled to be here, and you're actually live in my Pesach kitchen right now.
In the Pesach kitchen, Pesach, ready for Pesach all year round. And you're always ready because you have a Pesach cookbook, celebrated its fifth anniversary this year. Tell us about your Pesach cookbook.
So I came out 5 years ago in 2017. I got a call from Art Scroll in the end of 2016. They called me like literally 2 days after Sukkot. I know where I was. After Simchat Torah, I know where I was. I was in Florida, actually. It was I get a phone call and someone said, Art, would you like to meet me about doing a Pesach cookbook? I nearly collapsed. I didn't know I was on their radar. And it was out in time for the YU Sfarim sale. That's like 4 months. That's super fast. But because I've been doing Pesach catering at that point for 13 years, I had a collection of recipes and stuff. So it just came together beautifully.
Are they all original recipes? Is it a collection of your favorite family recipes or recipes you've learned from elsewhere?
It's everything. It's all of that. It's 80%, 85% my recipes. And then I have just community recipes, and someone gave me something one time and it worked so well. And then, you know, other recipes are from my mom or my mom's best friend, Betty. It's called Betty's Ices in the book. And, you know, she passed away since the book came out, but it has a whole little tribute to her. But like, it's just things I grew up with. My parents ran a Pesach program growing up, so I've always been Pesach-centric. So
amazing. So we're going to go back. We want to talk about your amazing accent and your life story. Yeah.
Let's move on from Pesach for now.
No, I was going to say
2 weeks.
I was going to say the opposite. Let's start with Pesach because that's what's on everybody's mind. So before we go back and catch up with your history, but let's fast forward right to Pesach because that's what everyone's thinking about. So I won't stereotype by saying which gender or which segment or what percentage of our listeners or viewers right now are in Pesach mode and getting ready. What would your message be to them? Somebody who right now is thinking about, oh my goodness, two starim, countless meals, hosting huge family. When do I kosher? When do I turn it over? How do I decide my recipes? When do I shop? How much do I stock up on? What are your Pesach hacks? What's your Pesach message to people?
Okay, So for starters, it is a really big holiday. That's why I think the Pesach business is much bigger than the Rosh Hashanah business or the Sukkot business. It's a really hard, I'm sure it's a $1 billion industry at this point, with if you look at it on a global level. Just take a breath. That's what I tell you. Grab pen and paper. I'm a big fan of the lists. Keep lists. Keep your lists from year to year. I'm actually, I have notepads. I've got, it's behind the camera. But I've like notepads from years and years and years of, even though I'm doing my Pesach business for 18 years, every year we write notes and we check. How much mayo did we buy? How many eggs did we buy? Where did we start cooking? It's always good. Like, write yourself, let's call it a Pesach journal. Okay, you heard it here first. I'm coining it now. Did you write yourself a Pesach journal? Label what year it is. Dear journal, today I'm starting for Pesach. It is the day after Purim. And then start. And I actually have on my website, naominachman.com, or it's the Aussie Gourmet, that's the name of my business, my catering business, a template that you can print out your menus. So start with saying what you want to eat and what you like and what you think you might like, and then work backwards from there. Then you create your shopping lists. That's dealing with the food. Then you might want to think about when you want a kasha. Like, I'm lucky, I've got a Pesach kitchen. Welcome to my Pesach kitchen. It's literally underneath my regular kitchen. But if you don't, you know, you might want to start a week before turning over. So this year, it starts on a Friday, so I would turn over on Sunday. Go to a friend for Shabbos, get yourself invited. That's what I do. My hack. You get yourself invited out to your friends Friday night and Shabbat lunch. That gives you time for your counters to rest, right? Because you have to... Rabbi, you'll correct me, you know, from the halakhic point of view, you let it rest for 24 hours. That will be Shabbos. And then Matzah Shabbos, you pour the boiling water and, you know, you do the self-cleaning and all that. So Sunday morning, you are ready to cook. And it doesn't matter that you're eating Pesach food all week, because it's protein and vegetables. You'll actually get really healthy. You roast some broccoli, you'll have some grilled chicken, you can barbecue outside. It's actually not a bad way to go. So it's
a very rough week, that week before Pesach, which is why I always start later, because my kids will complain, there is nothing to eat in this house. There's nothing.
That's not true. We've been eating regular Pesach food, which is just protein and vegetables, for 2 weeks already. And when I do want to make something different, I throw it on the barbecue outside, or we go out to eat. You know, we live in, right. I live in New York, you live in Boca, and you have so many great food options, because I ate it, every single one of them, yesterday.
You did. Right.
But that's what I would say. And this is what I always say. Someone else just asked me this question. People have got to remember, we had an incredible miracle that happened. Hashem took us out of Egypt, right? Don't get bogged down with all the crazy details leading up to it. We just look at the big picture. That's how I look at it. Like, we really like... had this incredible thing happen to us, and, you know, it just give yourself a little reminder that you're prepping for the reminder of that big miracle. Does that make sense?
That is such a great, first of all, that is such a great comment, because so many people get lost in the minutiae and the details, get overwhelmed and overworked, and feel like slaves instead of free people. And we're supposed to remember that the menu and the food and the flavors and the smells are all there to enhance the journey to freedom and our spiritual transformation, not to detract or exhaust us from it. So that is a really great point. First of all, can you just say the word barbecue again?
Barbecue.
That's it. Oh, that's amazing. So Australia, you grew up in Australia. Tell us about Australia. What was it like growing up? And what was your introduction to this love of food that made you an author, a chef, a podcast personality? Where did that come from?
Okay, so let's break it down. So I grew up in Sydney, Australia. What a beautiful place to grow up. I've done a lot of traveling. And people say, what's a favorite, the most beautiful place you've been to? I always say outside of Israel, because that's the most beautiful place in the world. I grew up in Sydney. Like, nothing compares to Sydney. Have you been to Australia?
I've not yet been there.
Not yet been. Okay. All right. Pack your bags, you have it. You should go. Now it's open. Go, everyone, go. It is the most beautiful, beautiful, gorgeous place. And it's very much growing up in the 70s and 80s in Australia. You can figure out how old they are. it was a small town and everyone knew everyone. If someone now asked me, do you know so-and-so from Sydney? If I don't know them, it's because either the Balchuva or they've got South African roots and they came since I left 30 years ago. But usually grew up in the 70s and 80s, all from people knew each other, whether you were Chabad or part of the Adas community. I was part of the B'nai Kiva Mizrahi community. Everyone knew each other. It was just a beautiful place to grow up. Great weather, very relaxed. And I love it. My dad ran a Pesach program, Pesach time. But the rest of the year, he was in the importing business. He had a boss. He worked for someone. And he ran the New South Wales, which is the capital of, which is the state. Sydney's the capital of New South Wales. So, you know, he ran the New South Wales division and imported kosher food. And it was great. It was a really great childhood, beautiful Jewish day schools. In my class, we had 100 kids. 9 of us were from. So it was definitely a challenge. And we didn't have kosher food. If anyone was ever going to America, we'd like, can you bring us back Pashka's chewing gum? Can you imagine? Like, it was like, it's such a treat to have Pashka's chewing gum. Meeting Americans in Israel in seminary was, you know, a whole different ballgame. Like, we had to learn their culture and I had to learn their culture. Like, you know, we are going to Chag Ha'aviv, Pesach, but for us, Chag Sukkot is in the spring. So all right. That, is, you know, it's backwards, you know. The toilet water does go down the other way, I'm just saying. and I still say tomato. But there were a little bit of cultural differences when I came here, but I'm so happy and proud that I got to grow up as an Aussie. I don't think in 30 years there's been a day that's gone by without someone commenting on my accent. I'm not joking.
It's a big advantage in life. It's a great advantage. Before you even, you could read the phone book and everyone would be like, that's amazing.
I had a teacher at Touro College and she said that to me, Naomi, you read from a phone book and I'll give you an A. I think I'm also very animated. That helps.
Yes.
But the accent definitely has been a leg up.
Are your parents both Australian?
So my dad was born in Australia. His parents came from Australia. His father came from Tzfat in Israel. Many generations in Tzfat. Actually, my grandparents' names are on the grandfather's names are great grandparents' names are on the Arizal Shul. Like you see Finkelstein, that's my family. And he met my grandmother through a pen pal of a mutual cousin. So it was like the original, like the J swipe, you know, like someone would set you up through a pen pal. That's how they did it back then. I know someone, write letters. Then he brought her out after he proposed through the mail. She came out to Australia from Leeds in England and settled in Australia, had my dad 5 kids. My dad's a middle of 5. And my mum's parents came after the war. They were met in a DP camp and they met Ali in 1956. And then they ended up in Australia. They met Ali in 48 and then in 56 they went from Israel to Australia. So
food is a family business. You really learned about food from your father. It's a family business. Are you paying it?
Sorry.
I was going to ask, are you paying it forward? Any of your kids picking up where you're not leaving off? You're still active, but you got it from your family? Are any of your kids involved?
So this is a big shout out to my daughter, Simi Sassini, and Simi and Rafi. They live in Israel. They are huge fans of the show. And here is a mug for you, Simi, that you have got for me yesterday when I was in Boca Raton. Big fan of the show, so I have and of your shiurim, so I have that. So
thank you.
So all my kids cook. Some of them love to cook, and some of them cook because they have to feed their families, or you know, they all love to eat. They love to eat. We love to eat in our family. Like going out on vacation is where we're gonna eat. Where we're gonna eat, and when we travel to crazy places like Albuquerque and there's no food, I make sure that we have a really yummy meal cooked in the Betty Crocker. So.
You know. Everyone's involved.
Yeah, so everyone's involved. But my dad cooks, my brother cooks, my grandparents cooks, my cousins cook, my uncle owned a restaurant, my other uncle owned a butcher shop, my great uncle owned a butcher shop. Like we are very entrenched in food.
Amazing. And you're involved as a media personality, obviously not only the author of cookbooks, but you have your weekly show Table for Two on Nachum Segal Network. First of all, take a moment to shout out to Nachum. We know there was a terrible fire in his studio and everybody's thinking about him and praying for him and want to help him rebuild. We love Nachum. He was actually an early guest on Behind the Bima. We know him a very long time. So,
you know how amazing Klal Yisrael is? A lot of people reached out to me I'm sorry about the studio, but first, how was Nachum? Like, everyone needs to know that Nachum physically was okay, and emotionally he's very, like, but thank God he's physically okay. People were really worried that Nachum was hurt, that he wasn't in the room, you know, like,
right.
It's amazing.
Thank God.
Really appreciate how beautiful Chloe Stroll is and how they worried about him so much.
100%. But you were telling me yesterday about how there's all this memorabilia, these pictures lining the walls, like everything's gone. There are so many years and years of history in that studio, the interviews and the people, the personalities, the collections of different, and now it's all gone. It's so sad. Mm.
Yeah, it's very sad. But he's amazing. He's resilient. He's back on the air and doing stuff. And we're going to have a big show this coming Friday. My show, Table for Two, is going to have we're doing it from Masia, the Soup Kitchen in Brooklyn, and they've done an amazing job in New York getting food out to the needy, and we're going to do our show from there, live on location. You've got to do a location show, oh my God.
Nice, live on location. I like that. I like that. So how did that begin? When did you realize, you know, it's one skill to be able to, in the kitchen, know how many spices to add and how long to leave it in the oven and know that you're a good cook, a good chef. That's one skill. It's another skill to become a media personality and know that you can host a podcast, or you could publish and author books, or you can have your own cooking show on kosher.com. When did you realize that you had the skill set to be a media personality?
Yeah, it's funny. I think it's just one of those things that literally evolved on its own. I grew when it grew, when it grew, when I grew. It was like intertwined like that. So the radio show started, Facebook started, everyone had Facebook, and you know, you kind of got your feet around that and your head around that, and everyone kind of learned how to manage that and use it as a tool to share information or family pictures or fake news, very sad, like all kinds of everyone's opinions and political, but so I would just share, like, made this for dinner tonight, and everyone would like comment. Then I was one time away. I worked in Camp Dina for many years, running culinary classes. I have a background in teaching. I have a BA from Touro. I taught for many years in the classroom. I taught at MTJ, the Yeshiva on the Lower East Side. And then I worked at the Education Alliance. I did cooking classes. And then I thought, when my third daughter sleepaway camp, it's expensive, you know. So I'm like, I'm going to ask Alex Gold if he'd like me to come and do culinary classes. And he said yes. And now it's been that I haven't been there this whole time, but this is going to be the 15th summer that they have culinary arts program started by me. So it was like one way to get started. And then I got a phone call when I was in Camp Dina from someone called Miriam Wallet, who was at the time, I did not know her. And she was Nachum's general manager. And she said, I'm doing a radio interview about like back to school food or maybe 9 days food or something. What it make it, would you like, Jamie Geller can't do it. Would you like to do the interview? I'm like, okay, sure. So I sat, I don't know if you remember Camp Dina. I know our girls went there together. The office in Camp Dina, I sat there on the phone and I had one of my friends hold my hand. I was shaking like a leaf. It was like this. But she interviewed me and my heart was pounding. And we did this interview. And then a few months later, she invited me back again. And a few weeks after that, she goes, we're starting our own network, the Nachum Siegel Network. Would you like a show? And I'm like, sure. And they threw me into it. And I have a lot of Karis. I talked to Miriam. It's a Nachum for, it's 9.5 years. I have like 250 shows. People go, I love your accent. I can listen to you talk all day. And I'm like, I've actually can fill your day with my voice. Just go to Table for Two on the Nachum Siegel Network and it's all on the archives.
That's amazing.
And then kosher.com came around and videos and Instagram changed my life. Cooking competitions, Zoom classes, cooking classes. Fun.
And you're still having fun. Do you ever get sick and tired of cooking? Do you order out because the last thing you want to do is be in the kitchen again?
A lot. I am not afraid to admit that. And my kids always say, there's nothing to eat in this house. Okay? So everyone, the shoemaker's children do not eat that well.
There you go.
I feel much better now.
We have 20 things or nothing.
That's funny. And the Mishpacha article, you have a monthly column in Mishpacha also, right?
Yeah, off the Eaton track. My next one is going to be about Boca. So watch out,
Boca, for that. Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Good to know.
I, you know, Hashem really runs the world. As Shoshana Robin and I, shout out to my friend Shoshana were pulling into the parking lot yesterday to have lunch at Carmela's. I get a text from Mishpacha, would you do your next article on a small out-of-town community that has restaurants? I'm like, I'm in Boca. I wouldn't call it a small community. But she's like, oh, my God, that would be amazing. So I'm like, great. So I ate at all the restaurants I could.
I always say I want to come back in my next life as Naomi Nachman because she eats everywhere, has the most delicious, amazing experiences, meets a million people, travels all over, like this glamorous, exciting life.
So fun. Come and join me. Let's run a Boca food tour somewhere. We'll have some ruchnias, we'll have some little gashmias, you know, a good balance.
Love it. We'll make a woman's trip or a woman's, you know, outing, retreat, yeah, something. I love it. Okay, done.
You got good people down.
And tell us about the travel. Traveling is a big part. Your traveling is private. It's with your family. Traveling is part of the cooking career.
It's everything. So I'm working on a Pesach program. I worked for many years already. I worked for Ram for a few years. And then I now work for Bruce Backman. I also work for Naomi Gross at Charmel Gross and Schechter program. So this year I'm working with Bruce Backman at Pesach in the Southeast. I'm very excited. I've got to still do some shopping for that. But I've got to buy a set of pots and pans for my chop competitions. But there's a shout out to Miriam Schreiber. She took me on four tours around the world. One was to Thailand, another one was to South Korea and Japan, another one was to India, another one was to Panama. So I went with her.
I
love to travel. We went to South Africa and two other African countries 3 years ago. We love to travel. And then Corona comes, and I was doing a lot of book tours and just traveling around. And then Corona comes, shuts it all down. And then can you imagine telling someone like me, you're not allowed out of the house? It was terrible. Don't even go to the supermarket. Gabby went once a week to the supermarket and did a lot of Zoom classes. Gabby's my third daughter. It's actually engaged. And
Mazal tov.
It's so exciting. So she would do like all the shopping for the Zoom classes. I coordinated everything all week and we ate the leftovers from the Zoom classes. It was just such a crazy time. So like once, and then I found out that I had Corona like many months after, like after Shavuot, they did in the Five Towns a community antibody testing at Shari Yashav. So I had antibodies. I'm like, okay, great. So, and as the travel restrictions were coming off, I decided to say, we played a lot of it to ride. And you know that game, you look at the map of America, and I'm like, oh, wait, let's go here. So we did a big trip at the end of the summer to Wyoming. And then we did Wyoming, Montana, South Dakota, Colorado, and Nebraska in one trip. And I'm like, then we counted how many we did. Got to 28. I'm like, oh, let's see if we can finish it. So this is like August of 2020. Until today, we're now up to 48.
48. That's not bad for an Australian. That's impressive.
For an American, that's impressive.
For anyone, exactly.
Yeah, you don't even have the head start most Americans have. You know, you went on your Washington trip as a kid, so you could check that out. Like that, you don't even have the head start, so that's very impressive.
But you don't understand her trips. Her trips are like finding the kosher food or bringing and advising everyone how to travel with the right appliances, with the right kosher items, and then finding all the local Chabad and making sure that they have those connections with the Jewish community there, and then going on the coolest trips and. I love it. It's just amazing.
You should know when I do these crazy trips, I'll try to reach out to the Chabad Rebbetzins and say, do you guys need any of Israel products? Can I bring you something? Because I know they have so much mesiris nefesh with Chalav Israel and it's hard. Right. They do it. They're amazing. I'm like, can I bring you some yogurt, some cheeses, anything? So
that's very really sweet. Fun. That's very thoughtful. So let me ask you a question. When you're doing these trips, how do you strike the balance, asking for a friend, between while you're traveling really being off the grid, it's your family, it's an experience just for you, and saying, well, this is part of my brand and my impact and my influence. I want to share what I'm going through with others, not from an ego standpoint, but from I want to bring them into the fun. I want to inform them of ideas that they can do. How do you know where the boundaries are between let's just have this experience for us and let's not chronicle it or take pictures of it or stream it or post it? And what do you say? No, this has value and this is part of what I'm doing and this is contributing something for people. So I'll share now.
Asking for a friend. I would imagine that your friend goes through quite a lot of things also. When you are a community person, you know, sometimes I did hear your story about you went to summer in Florida and you wouldn't tell us where it was because, you know, I'm a huge fan of Behind the Bima myself. You went summer in Florida and you wouldn't tell us where you were.
Right.
You know which episode I'm from.
Yes.
So I think they're just used to it and I don't do it all the time and they know because I do it. They get a lot out of it. Like my kids have traveled a lot and I've been asked to go on really cool things that they get to come on because I do the Instagram. So it is a bit of a hard balance and I can do it quickly also, that helps. Or we say, all right, I'm going to Instagram this now and then I'm going to just put away the phone for a couple of hours because I want to enjoy it, you know. Sometimes if I overstory, they don't want to see it either. So you have to find that balance between the viewers and me and my family. The viewers are my family, but I have to say, like, my husband gets stopped in so many places. Oh, my funny, I'm watching on Instagram, you know?
That's funny.
Well, I think Naomi's differentiating. I think what you're saying is that most of your travels are really, like, work is allowing it, and you bring your family along, as opposed to it being a family vacation trip. So that's very different. I'm saying if you're traveling for work and you're writing up your trip for a publication or to speak about it, then that's a different definition of a trip than a family vacation where you're really supposed to be focused on your children, planning a trip around your children. Very different.
Right. So the two children that travel the most with us are the two, my older two children, very proud of them, have made Aliyah. My oldest daughter's married. She has two kids. My second daughter just finished her master's degree and she got a job at Masah. We're very proud of her. So they live in Israel. So the younger two do most of the traveling with us. They're 23 and 13, 14. So they're like not little kids, but they really understand the balance and they know that I get all this stuff. It's definitely, you know, if I see that they need something that they really don't want me to do it, or my husband will say, I'm not sure if that's appropriate for Instagram. I'm like, you know what, we'll discuss it. Like, I'm very careful about what goes on, you know, like I don't like to be in a position where I don't want to be there if it shouldn't be on Instagram, you know what I'm saying? In terms of Ruchnias and Gashmias stuff. So, but I really try, like, I once was holding a beer and my husband goes, you shouldn't hold a beer while you do Instagram. I'm like, I'm not driving, but it's like this pastiche, you know.
You're tasting it for work.
No, also you're Australian. Australians can hold a beer.
Aussie
can hold a beer.
Over the barbecue.
Yeah, I'd almost be disappointed if you weren't holding a beer. I think, you know, to me, the barometer is if you're still struggling with it. Yeah, exactly. You could have the beer in your Emunah Shir cup, caffeinate with Kavana. I don't know. How would you get drunk with, I don't know what. But I would say as long as you're struggling with it, I think that's what I think is the key. You know, when you're no longer struggling and everything is just indulgent, that's when you've crossed the line. But as long as you're always evaluating, you're struggling, your spouse or your family are part of that. It's like a chavrusa and figuring it out together and push back sometimes. I think then you're doing okay. The people I see that I think have crossed the line are the people who are no longer in the struggle. They forgot they have a private life or a private responsibility. Their whole identity isn't too intertwined with their public personality. And I think that's when they get into trouble. What would you recommend for people who, you know, you're an influencer, you're popular on Instagram. What should people be looking for in terms of who they follow? Who should they allow into their life to be influencing them or their children? When you're choosing who to follow, what are your criteria?
Great. I'm so glad you brought this up. I'm going to be careful how I do this and respectfully I don't want to step on any fellow bloggers' toes or any fuss for shalom. My foodie community are all very tight, which is very nice. We help each other. But I'm not talking about food influencers, but there are bigger influencers out there who I don't think are sneers or in their behavior or how they dress, and I don't follow them. I don't ask my children to do anything that I don't do. I can't say to my Leora, go daven if I don't daven, right? So I make sure I daven each morning. So I make sure then I can bust my 14-year-old saying, go daven, you know? But I can't follow someone who's not a role model for myself as someone who aspires to be frumer and searching always to do the right thing. By shame, I feel like I always want Hashem to be proud of me. And then, but I have to make sure that my daughter has that same philosophy. My daughters, I have four daughters, no boys. I'm a grandson. So it's just, I'm very careful. Like, if I don't want her to follow them or do, it's do as I say, do as I, no, it's do as I say and do as I do. What's that expression?
Yeah, you got it. Right.
I can't expect my children to do anything that I'm not doing. So I set a role model for SNES or having fun or enjoying life. Everything we do is a role model for our children, especially with following on Instagram. I get a lot of emails from parents about this. I'm not doing this chas v'sholem to sound guyvedic at all. That's so not me. I'm very like, and Yocheved knows me. I'm like very chill like that. But like, it's very important for the I'm just want to try to say it right. I know there's so many people listening, but just have that perfect role model, and that they say, I allow my children, I get this all the time. You're a role model for our children. We really like the way you dress, your sneers, the way you talk. We let our children follow you. And that to me is the biggest conflict. Or all these kids that watch me on kosher.com, whether they see me on kosher.com crossover in Mishpacha or a crossover with kosher.com, I'm the same person in real life and on all my platforms. And I think that's so important. And I want to be that role model, because I know it's turned into this. So, you know, role model for Hashem, for the people, my kids, everyone, you know.
Beautiful. I never thought about that, that it's not just about like being a good cook or being a good personality, but in the from circles, if you want to be someone of influence and you want to have a good and proper influence, then you have to be careful about your.
I take that job very seriously, really seriously. Wherever I am, like, there's no like
wavering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Consistent. Got to be consistent through and through. Let's Naomi, thank you for your time letting us go behind the Bima, behind the Pesach kitchen. Let's go through a little lightning round. Favorite food?
I want to go back to Pesach. Back to Pesach for a second, because I didn't interject when we were talking about Pesach. I hope it's okay. Just one more minute, because I want to bring it back full circle. When it comes to Pesach, I think that the way people prepare is very much based on their personalities all year, you know, of how they prepare or what their style is all year round. So if someone's a procrastinator and like to do things last minute, Pesach, when all the hype and everyone shopping 3 weeks before and the shelves running out of things and everyone like going crazy, that person, it's just not, they're not doing it until later. So, you know, they're typically more chill and they can handle it. The person who is more anxiety ridden and needs to do everything very, Pesach, I think for them is extremely stressful and, you know, a big headache. And so it really depends a lot. And I think it's very important to just make a point that, you know, Pesach and all halachic observances should not become a, you know, an OCD trigger, you know, that it shouldn't become because the truth is that there are so many laws and there are so many details that surround these Yom Tovim and so many of our mitzvos and halachos that sometimes it could make a person, like it could definitely exacerbate those qualities of anxiety, of OCD, of, you know, getting so nervous and, you know.
You know what else it shouldn't do, because you're raising a great point about not triggering OCD tendencies in people. But as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking that it could trigger something else also. This would be a great article for you to write. And when I say you, I mean either of you or the two of you together. But I think there's also a big dose of competitiveness where, and social media has made this worse, where people see that someone's been koshered for 7 weeks and has 19 kugels in the freezer. And now you're like, I'm a failure. I'm a loser. I'm inadequate. I'm terrible. I don't get it together. I don't even know why I'm trying, because I can't keep up. And it's also pre-Pesach's a time, the whole year, but pre-Pesach especially, to not measure yourself against anyone else, that it's not a competition. There's no right or wrong. People have different styles. Like you said, Yocheved, some people will kosher 48 hours before Pesach and bang out 9 meals in a span of 12 hours. And other people need 6 weeks to do it. And there's no right or wrong. And people shouldn't measure themselves against others. And they shouldn't go into Pesach, you know, stumbling and limping in, feeling badly about themselves. People should walk in with pride. They got
done. They should
know
themselves.
Based on who they are. Right.
They should not get carried away with the people around them who might be doing things earlier or, you know, like, know yourself. I don't need to start that earlier. I'm going to get it all done. Right.
And if we've got to address the people that go away for Pesach also and get overwhelmed by stuff also.
Packing.
I'm just going back for 1 second to when you get yourself invited out to a friend so you can let the counters rest. You do that to someone who's already going away for Pesach, who doesn't have to worry right. about kashrut. I'm not sure if I mentioned that. But
yes, I thought of that, that you're going to your friends who are going away for Pesach. The friends are staying and I'm inviting
you. But people go that are going away also have their, you know, they're going away, but still that's also, it could be a stress and you got to make sure you do what you need to do for that program. And for some people, that's their only vacation that they get to see their whole family together. So I think it's a beautiful thing. Just look at the big picture. Hashem brought us out of Egypt. And I think the way that Corona fell last year, Corona fell 2 years ago, right before Pesach, just put us all back to remember that Hashem brought us out of Egypt. And I'm going to remind you of that, not a Pesach program. Yeah, everyone's going back to the basics. I'm thrilled that we're back to normal. We're almost fully right. That programs are up and running and everything and Orlando's going to be hopping and everything's going to be amazing. But I really feel like it was such a strong message that we forgot that Hashem brought us out of Egypt because we're not going away, you know? Right. And I just...
Yeah, the simplicity of it. Right. The not competing, I think, goes in both directions, which is important to state also, which is you have other people who will say, I feel bad about myself that I need 6 weeks. You know, how are they able to cook it all in 3 days? So one can feel inadequate in either direction, and neither should feel inadequate. Not a competition. Great point, Yocheved. People need to know themselves, have a self-awareness, know how they work. And I'll tell you, in the rabbinic world, it's the same way. There are people who, since Hanukkah, have their Pesach drushes and shiurim ready, and there are other people who thrive by procrastinating and doing it all last minute, and each one feels inadequate compared to the other. But the answer is, know yourself what works best for you, and then embrace that and be proud of that and stop comparing or competing.
And no guilt.
We say in our house, you do you.
Right.
You
no,
do
no,
you.
And no guilt. And, you know, whatever you're choosing to do with this Yontif, whether you're starting early, starting late, going away, going to family, whatever you're doing, embrace it. You know, this is your plan for Pesach. You're going to get it all done. It's going to be wonderful. And don't feel guilty. I'm not staying home and my neighbor is making Pesach. And don't feel bad. Just embrace it. This is your plan this year, and it's going to be a beautiful Pesach. And try to like live in the moment, and don't get carried away and bogged down by all the details. Try to do it right, do it as best as you can, and then go into the Yontif being excited and ready.
Yeah, but
for
I will add this.
Yeah,
and happy. Yeah, stay happy and smile.
And these are two women saying this, so you know.
Yes.
Yeah, on our program we blur out the face of the man. I will say, if you are going away, I'm getting in trouble. If you are going away for Pesach, and I'm sure it's stressful having to have 7 outfits to change into a day and to have to shop for everyone and pack, just don't complain to someone who's staying home for Pesach. As stressful as that is, share that stress with someone else going away for Pesach, with
do
the other
your
people in your party.
Your theory.
Yeah, I was going to say the comfort and a dump out. But this is not just a coping mechanism. You can complain to me, because the truth is, don't feel bad for the people staying home. I feel bad for the people going away. I love sleeping in my bed, and I love my wife's cooking on Pesach. It's our family knows it. We're used to it. It's our family recipes. I love being around my dining room table, not sharing it with the world. I love being home in Boca and being a scholar in residence in my own shul, where I get to sleep in our own bed. And then not know anyone in shul and feel like I'm a scholar in residence elsewhere because of the amount of guests that come. So I have sympathy for the people going away. I love staying home. We wear the same thing every day for a week straight. Nobody cares. It's perfect. It gets stained and we still wear it. It's amazing.
Not exactly. But and we still are paying prices, and we're still, it's not like we're, you know, just because we're not going away, we have, it's still working. It's great, but it's beautiful, and every way has its pros and cons, and everyone just should enjoy what they're doing and you know, be prepared, and just, you know, without all the drama and the complaining and the kvetching and the heart, just, this is a time of year we're all know it's coming, you know, we'll make it happen, we'll make it work.
Lean in.
Don't feel pressure.
What do you do in that Pesach kitchen, Naomi? You have good music playing. How do you stay happy and positive? And your energy is just bouncing off the wall.
I know. I'm always, and I've been up since 4:45 because I started my day off in Boca Raton today.
That's right.
I don't know. I've always been very high energy. I think that's why I can do what I do. Endless events all the time. It was a little hard to Kona when I had to stay in the house, but otherwise I've just... Everyone, like, some people are musical and some people are very smart yourself and have become big. I just have energy. That's my gift that Hashem gave me, a lot of energy. I'm named after a 9-year-old who passed away. My grandmother's sister who died in the war, her name was Sarah, and then I'm Naomi Sarah Chaya. So I'm Sarah. So I've actually got a 9-year-old, I say, living inside me. So I live 2 lives at the same time.
Wow, that is such an insight. Okay, Yocheved, can we do a lightning round now?
Yes, I'm sorry.
But I'm going to okay. do a back after.
Okay, no problem. Okay, favorite food?
Lamb. Lamb chops.
Lamb.
Baby lamb.
Baby lamb chops.
Yeah. More sheep than people in Australia.
Interesting. Favorite ingredient to cook with?
Salt.
Salt.
It is nothing without salt.
Totally wow. agree. Totally agree.
90% amazing, but the 10% takes you salt.
Yes. Favorite beverage?
Chardonnay.
Okay.
Favorite holiday?
Pesach. No joke. I love it. I can't wait.
Favorite recipe in terms of, you know, it's Erev Shabbos, you don't feel like cooking like crazy. What is a go-to, easy, just throw this in and your favorite recipe go-to when you're not in the mood for something big and elaborate?
Steaks.
For Shabbos?
With salt?
Oh, yes. These big fat steaks, the cowboy steaks. You salt and pepper them. Smear it with olive oil, sear it for a minute or two on it, like, you know, maybe about 3-4 minutes on each side, and then put it in the oven at lichtbenching at 200 degrees or 180, and by the time you get to the meals, our minion is about 45 minutes to an hour, like Tabata, it's a small minion here in the tree streets in Woodmere, and by the time you speak gets home and we do soup and eat, it's like medium rare in the middle, like medium. That's for a really nice. Quick day.
So for all the women listening, like me, what is the go-to weeknight dinner? Because that...
Go-to weeknight dinner. Salmon, potatoes, and broccoli. Anything in my other Pesach, and anything in my regular cookbooks. I have 2 babies, right? Your books are your babies. So anything in these books works really well. And anyone can always, I hope you've all picked up on Amazon or your local Judaica store. But I everything in here is really easy to find. All the ingredients are easy to find. Keep a good pantry. Just, you know, make sure you have chickpeas in the pantry. There's broccoli in the freezer. Salt.
So being well stocked is important.
Yeah.
What's your favorite of the 48 states you've been to?
So many, like so many beautiful parts in each state, like beauty. We're quite recently in New Mexico, Uvalde. It's amazing. I mean, Hawaii is beautiful. Alaska is beautiful. It's such a beautiful world, and it's our job to go see. Like, my motto in life is see the world one side at a time.
What's the favorite place you visited outside the United States?
On the beach where I'm from. No. Okay, but I would say Africa. I love Africa. I want to go back to Africa.
Well, like safari?
Safari. I want to go on safari. We should do a shul one.
Shul safari. All right. Do you like, catch the animal, shech the animal, and eat the animal for dinner? All part of the tour.
They eat a lot of meat in South Africa. A lot of meat.
I'm sure they do. What's the cholesterol in South Africa? Cholesterol in South Africa and Australia.
I don't know. They wash it down with beer, so it balances it out, you know?
That's right. That sounds good. Yocheved, any other questions for Naomi before we let her go?
Okay, Rabbi Goldberg, what's your favorite food?
Steak. Anything Yocheved makes. That's right. Good answer. Whoop, we lost Yocheved. I don't know what happened to Yocheved. You see, she can't take a compliment. We lost her. Yeah, she'll rejoin. But anything she makes is delicious. She's a great cook and a great chef. That's why you guys are great friends. So it's amazing. Thank you. Thank you for letting us go behind the bima with you and learn from you about Pesach and the whole year. Oh, she's back.
Let's see. I don't know. Someone tried.
What happened? What's going on?
I went on Do Not Disturb And then one of our daughters tried FaceTiming, and that took me off. Stop. I couldn't hear anything, so I'm just sitting there nodding.
But yeah, Heva, this is a tryout to be a guest host, go from a guest host, yeah, maybe taking over, maybe taking over as a permanent host.
The technology just gets me every time. I can't set up here.
I'm looking to replace Brody. You were the number one candidate, but it's not looking so good right now.
You know what? Get me a good computer situation. And
come on, get it together. Okay. Get it together. Yocheved, any closing really question for Naomi?
Yeah, I missed a couple of questions. What haven't you covered? Let's see.
We talked about what's your favorite state, favorite place to visit in the world.
Okay. What was your favorite activity that you did, like in somewhere interesting, like their favorite touring thing or
a safari in South Africa? Talk about that. We did a balloon ride in Albuquerque, New Mexico this summer. That was amazing. I was a little nervous, but it was really cool.
Wow.
That is cool. Wow. Amazing.
Well, the great Naomi Nachman, kosher cookbook author times two, Kane Yerbu, who's going to come out first, Fee Safer or your new book? Who knows?
No, Fee Safer. I've hung up my hat for now for books.
For now. Aww. We got you. Extraordinary chef, host of Table for Two in the Nachum Segal Network. And again, our thoughts are with Nachum. We love Nachum. And we're thinking about him in a difficult few days. And we're just grateful that you went behind the Bima with us. Get back to work in that Pesach kitchen.
Yes.
Just so that Yocheved, Yocheved can feel bad about herself. How long have you been cooking for Pesach already?
Well, it's only because it's my living. I do it for a living, you know. Pesach bills.
Gotcha.
We started a week before Purim.
A week before Purim. Okay,
and
not that
she's going away, so I don't think she's the best person to follow.
My clients, I'm cooking for 23 families.
That's crazy.
Right, wow. Cooking for others. Yeah. Well, we know they will enjoy and they will eat well. Thank you for going behind the beam with us. It's great to spend some time and wishing you a chag kasher v'samech. Enjoy.
Thank you to your community, both you and the Reverend. I just really enjoy Behind the Beam and listening to you. Rabbi Moskowitz has been on recently. Wish everyone and family well. And Rabbi Brody, I feel like they're my friends. I do you guys what people do to me. I feel like I know you.
That's so funny. We are honored. We're honored and we appreciate it so much. We look forward.
We love everything you do. You're great. Such a personality. So talented. Keep it up. We really enjoy it all.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Take care, everyone.
Wow.
Rabbi Brody, she wants to get to know Simone. She feels like she knows everybody.
Well, Simone starts cooking the day of Pesach. there are different people. They have different minhagim, but I can tell you, your wife had the line of the night.
What was that?
When she goes packing. She was talking about people going away and all the stresses that they have.
Yeah. She's
like, yeah.
Packing. Yeah. So tough. All those outfits. Really. You know, I've quoted this great article by a therapist called Comfort In, Dump Out, which is when there's a crisis, you have to know which concentric circle you're in, and always comfort in. And you share with others the stress you're in by dumping out. So I think that applies to Pesach. If you're going away for Pesach and it's so stressful, all your clothing shopping and packing and travel and all that eating and all those decisions you have to make, you know, just dump out, comfort in and dump out. Like find someone else going away also.
I don't know which food I should get at the tea room.
Right. It's so frustrating. It's so hard.
Should I have the sushi or should I have the
nine choices? Every dinner, there's like nine choices and I just don't know which one to have.
Right.
It's so hard. And then I've got to change my outfit again. And there's so many shiurim and the concerts. I'm just exhausted. I don't know how I could do it.
Right. Right. How do they expect me to get from the tea room to the concert and then back to the tea room in time?
It's just so hard.
There's not enough room. There's not enough room in the tea room. There's too many people. Yeah.
Baruch Hashem, it's a beautiful thing. People go away. It's beautiful. People stay home.
I want you to know, there was actually a line someone said where they said, she might have said it, where she said, for some people, this is the only time the entire year they get together with their family. And, people don't consider that.
I agree. I agree. You'll notice it's interesting. A few years ago, over a decade ago, very prominently, Rabbanim every year would rip and rank on the people who go away, right? The kashrus is not great, overindulgence, the expense, what it cost. And then you know what happened? How come you don't hear that anymore, ever?
They're all there.
because rabbis started getting invited to Pesach programs.
Right.
So now you never hear that anymore. And the truth is, you know, I myself was inclined to share that criticism. First of all, I too have been able, privileged to, not never on Yontif, but on Chol HaMoed go. But it's more than that. I do recognize there are people who have capacity and they're super generous. They give enormous stock elsewhere. And either it's hard to make Pesach, or when you have a large family, Kenai Nahara, and the only way to actually be together and spend time is going away, and you can afford it, and you're giving stuck a commensurate. I once wrote an article, and I talked about that. I said, nobody should, you know, you should forgive everybody. Be happy for everybody who can go away. You have to give parallel to what you spend on yourself.
Right.
So if you're stingy and frugal and spend little on yourself for Pesach, you could get away with giving very little mos chit and very little stuck for Pesach. But if you're spending an enormous amount on yourself, your family, some exotic location, flights, you know, crazy expense, then don't give the rabbi like high dollar, you know. Right. Don't leave a $20 bill when you sell your chametz. Like, make sure that there are people. You've seen the prices of stuff. My wife texted me today what the cost of a pound of shmur matzah in Boca Raton is. I won't even say what store or what outlet or what famous supermarket. I won't say which one, but shots or matzah. Like, just give me a guess what it is a pound.
Is it more than $25?
It's $41 a pound.
Okay.
And you're only allowed to buy a pound.
Right.
So I texted our kashrus people. I said, help me. Did the cost of water and flour go up? Like, what am I missing? I know that there's supply chain issues, but are the supply chain issues with water and flour?
We should go into the matzah making business.
So I was told that apparently a lot of matzah is manufactured in Ukraine and not all of it got out. I don't know if that's true or not.
Maybe a shortage?
I have no idea if that's true. But apparently there's a lot of demand and there's not enough supply. And that's why the price is. So is the price gouging? Are people just charging because they can? Because people need the shmur matzah? I don't know. But I do know that it's out of control. What's my point in saying that is that there are people who are going to make a choice of whether they're going to have meat at their Seder.
Right.
Or chicken. Or the famous story, I think it was the Nodi Behuda, the famous, the Beis Halevi, famous story about dairy, you know?
Right.
I'm sober. I forget who the story was with, but a woman came to him and asked about, like, a Shiloh about dairy at the Seder.
Right.
And he understood the Shiloh wasn't about dairy. She was basically, she
That's
couldn't
all
afford.
She's got.
Yeah. So if you're going away, enjoy, indulge, fly halfway around the world, go to some exotic location, go spend it at endless tea rooms. Enjoy. You deserve it.
Right.
God bless you. Just don't give $20 to Kimcha de Pischa. Don't just give $20 to, it's Pesach time. It's expensive. There are people who are making decision. They won't have wine. They can't get enough matzah. They may not even have chicken. So if you're going to the program, I don't 10% of your cost of the program, 5%, 3%. Right. There are people who are going to spend six figures in a program.
Right.
So shouldn't they give 10,000, 5,000,
right.
3,000?
You know, it is nice. I've been on some of these programs. Simone and I, you know, ran youth programs and whatever they were over the years.
Right. I remember.
What's nice is when they you know, sometimes they'll do these appeals. You know, they'll have, you know, people make donations for aliyahs and things like that. And it goes to a specific organization and they raise a lot of money. So that's also a nice, you know,
It is, and it's beautiful, and it should go, and I'm grateful to the organizations that benefit from auctioning the aliyahs, the Pesach programs, but Stucca begins at home. So if you're leaving your community, don't forget your community. Yeah, you're leaving your community for Pesach, and you're leaving behind you. That's not to say that everybody who stays home, you know, needs help, but it means to say that there are people back at home that you're leaving who can't afford grape juice or wine or matzah or chicken.
Right.
So I don't know if you're spending 20 or 30 or 50 or $100,000 on a program. So write a check for $5,000 or $10,000 and say, Rabbi, there are people who can't afford it. Let me help them make Pesach.
Fine. So you know what I'm doing? If anyone wants me to come to their Pesach program, I'm sure there's a lot of these big Pesach programs. I'm only going to the ones that are going to guarantee. I want to see donations back to your community. If you're not giving back to your community, I'm not coming.
Duly noted.
That's
duly-
it.
Duly noted.
Okay. So all you people out there that want me for your Pesach program, I got to see donations back to the communities.
Yeah.
Not coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another fascinating conversation behind the Bima. We continue to miss our dear beloved friend, Rabbi Moskowitz. We really miss him. I was actually catching up with my son, Shai, earlier this evening, the Rick Smith Jr. episode, the great card trick that you remember he did. Because you remember that opened up? You remember our three kids started that episode out? Was it our Purim? I don't remember. So we were watching it. I saw you.
That was a great episode.
I screened with all four of us doing the interview. And those were the days, not only when Rabbi Moskowitz was on, those were the days that you had time to do interviews. You remember those days?
Can I tell you, it's the same thing. You know, we've been doing that for almost, it's about 2 years. We've been having a weekly shiur with the Nir Yaakov shiur with Rosh Shiva and Rabbi Grossman. And we're realizing now, you know, it's always during lunch. And
right,
no one's available during lunch anymore. Right. Like we have to figure out what's the other time we can.
Post-corona.
It's post-corona.
But you're too busy. But, you know, tonight we had a fantastic guest co-host. Maybe she'll become a permanent co-host.
Until she dropped the phone. But other than
maybe she'll be a permanent co-host.
She's great.
On the women episodes. We'll see. You never know.
We'll see.
She's applied. Tonight was her what do you call that? Audition.
I think she was great.
Two thumbs up?
I'm going two thumbs. Listen, it's a natural fit. I think it's interesting because you can see the natural chemistry as, you know, husband and wife, that could be a new show.
It works.
Rabbi Rebison.
It works.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Anyway, big thank you again to Shimon Kamenetsky, Booker Promotions, BOOKER, Booker Promotions, Shimon@bookerpromo.com for any of your promo needs. Sponsored tonight for Booker Promotions and for Noam Kamenetsky.
Happy
50, many more years in good health. We look forward to wishing you a happy 100 on Behind the Bima. What number episode will it be? Fast forward the two of us. Welcome to Behind the Bima.
What?
What is that? And Mir Tashem by us.
What'd you say?
We'd love nothing more. All right. The countdown to Pesach has begun. Everybody, have a fantastic night. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, stay holy.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Bima. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next week for another peek behind the Bima.